Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and unaffiliated, to Bending the Elements, an Avatar and Korra podcast, with your hosts Caleb and Isaac of the Novice Elitists. Caleb, how are you currently doing right now?
Oh boy, I can't believe that we're finally here. It's for the last little leg of doing Avatar. Last Airbender, I was starting to get a little bit down. I was like, oh man, like it's sad to close this chapter of our lives. We've been doing this for 3 years. It's, you know, what a shame. But now that we're here, now that I watched the first episode of Korra again, oh man, I'm ready to go. I'm back on the hype train during this episode.
Oh ho, this is interesting indeed. Yes. No, here today we a little different, I guess. A little brand new, I suppose. We just, finished, well, a few saw the feed. We obviously finished our three comic book reviews, and as promised, we're starting Korra. A new coat of paint, I suppose. And
a new coat of paint, and perhaps a new coat of a summary. We took a little break doing all those comic book stuff, and so almost forgot to include this. But yeah, let me quickly jump into this, and then we can see where else we're going to go. 7 years after the defeat of the Fire Lord, the world is a very different place, and meeting those changes is the new Avatar. A girl from the water tribe named Korra, and now with the Order of the White Lotus looking after her, they do their best to train her in their isolated compound, far from the modern world that Korra desperately wishes to see. And when she reaches a plateau with the masters available to her within their walls, she sees a chance to venture out. Her new airbending teacher, Master Tenzin, comes to pay her a visit, but says that he's unable to stay due to the political tensions back at his home in Republic City, and that he'll have to delay her training. She tries to convince the Order of the White Lotus to let her go to Republic City to train there, but they refuse and tell her that she'll just have to wait until Tenzin's available. But not taking no for an answer, Korra sneaks aboard a ship and sails off to the big city, but not before having a nice talk with a very grandmotherly Katara, who tells her that she gives her blessing to go out into the world. But not being used to the social norms of the complex dynamics in Republic City, Avatar Korra finds herself at odds with law enforcement, local gangs, and even her new master, Tenzin. But she impresses upon him the need to find her own way in the world, and a purpose, something that she can't do under the watchful eye of the Order of the White Lotus old folks. And as we arrive at the aftermath, Tenzin and his family decide to take her in and begin her training. But in the background, the table is set for a coming battle with the Avatar, and a movement known as Equalists, a group of non-benders led by a mysterious masked man named Amon, who see the benders as oppressors, and seek to upturn their rule. But we'll discuss all those details and more as Bending the Elements gets a big welcome to Republic City.
But anyway, I guess we'll get started with this. So please, ladies and gentlemen, those between and affiliated, if you can get your legally or illegally purchased digital or physical copies, versions of this in front of you at timestamp zero, we're going to do our very best to provide every single bit of context that we can through the show, because this ain't a commentary. And you know how it goes.
Oh no!
Kind of feels surreal. It kind of feels weird after we did those three books. It's like, all right, we're back to this then. So I gotta like shake off the dust, not the rust yet. Or maybe I'm a little bit rusty. Who knows? Anyways, please press play right now.
Yeah, I guess as the credits are rolling here, I'll do the little bit here. This one was written by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Knitsko, and was directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, returning from the previous series, and also directed by Ki Hyun Ryu, I think that's how you say that. So at least some familiar faces following us along as we see this familiar little group of friends, as we take a peek at, I guess, kind of the mythifying that they've given these characters all these years after the fact.
Yeah, no, a little tapestry give a remembrance to those who we were once part of and we had seen for so long and now on to the new series. What did you think of the opening with the, I guess, updated versions of the bending arts?
Oh, I like them. I like the background. I think that's pretty cool. And it definitely carries a new flavor, especially having a different voice doing that little introduction for us. So I think that's...
Actually, you know, for that demonstration, if I may add, I kind of like how maybe this will be kind of funny. In Avatar, the background was always red. At least during those demonstrations, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously it was, you know, a throwback to, you know, Kung Fu movies in the day. But I was also thinking, you know, again, this just came to me. It's also like, oh, what if it was also potentially like talking about how like there's war? Like it's a reflection of like these characters that are like amidst a war backdrop. And then this, it's very like, you know, light, clear, like, you know, welcoming blue.
Yeah, it definitely has a lighter tone to it. Yeah. Yeah. So no, that I never thought about that either, but that's an interesting point. Yeah.
Again, that's probably not what they were going for, but just definitely due to something different. But yeah, and you can obviously see that it's all the avatars, including this new one, the eponymous like character, I suppose, who we're going to meet soon.
Yeah. And I like how we get the map and then we kind of go down into it, and it's like, it's no longer the era of myths. Now we're entering a modern era with a very modern looking city with skyscrapers and bridges that look like they could have come out of now. Yeah, well, we've entered the modern age, the industrial age of this world.
Yeah, but then we at least get to see that this city, which I think Caleb, this may be you, Dao, potentially, mm-hmm. Who knows. But the city is at least guided, or at least looked after, or at least watched by the previous Avatar, Aang.
Yeah, this giant Statue of Liberty, or Statue of Balance, one might say. As we see the, I think that maybe this could potentially be the Whistler Sun that you suggested to me, but I don't know.
Unconfirmed. Perhaps I will leave that in the past and not just be like Whistler Sun, as if I want to happen. But that's not true. That's not true. Anyways, also interesting title card. They have.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna make anything about like the font. It's just like they changed it. That's fine.
No, I hate all change.
Oh, I can't say.
If they change something that I love, then I'll turn this off and I'll try to get it canceled.
Yeah, let's cancel Legend of Korra. Wait a minute.
Oops, too late. Cancel the next Blu-ray release. Change that font. But outside of that silliness. Yeah, so we jump into a very snowy landscape as we are cutting to, I don't know what to call this. Are these the three wise men? Is this... the old biblical myth coming again?
You know, good question. If it is if the Magi have come seeking a king, who knows? But it seems these mysterious fellows are looking for something or somebody. Mm. Who knows?
Yeah, and potentially they find it as they arrive at this little hut, and a man comes out, lets them in, and their house looks like a big mess. It seems like they're in a pretty small little village, and yeah, I'm curious why these guys are here. Obviously, I know because I already watched it.
But... Other than that, of course. It seems as though they introduced themselves. Maybe not they introduced, but the man of the house, he notes that they are the Order of the Pie Show Players. Interesting. Mm. Okay, they've made their presence known.
Yeah, potentially they're here to set up their next tournament. Like, oh, this seems like a great location to bring some tourists in as we all come to a week-long tournament.
Yes, no, we're going door to door to see if there is this the one person that is the one to rule all pie show players, the pie show avatar. Folks, would you like to enjoy the company of this tournament that we're like holding? And you know, both of them are like, I think we're good, as the lady there is, you know, seems a little bit dusty and whatnot, and a little frazzled, as you would say. But she goes, oh, there may be somebody who might want to play in this pie show tournament of yours. And she's like, hey, Korra, could you please come out here? And all three of them are like, what? Why would your daughter come? And then, of course, she like, you know, smashes through the door with earthbending. In the water tribe? Okay, I mean, I guess both of them are water tribe looking. This is, I guess they could have adopted a earthbending kid. That's fair. Okay, she's like throwing fire. She's throwing hands. Okay, never mind. What's going on here?
Yeah, and all jokes aside, I do like, because they're kind of questioning, like, hey, you know, we've been from village to village at this point, checking out families that claim to have the Avatar, but every time it's a bust. So what makes you so sure that this time you've got the answer? And it's Korra herself who smashes through the wall and says, I'm the Avatar, deal with it. Yeah, what'd you think about that little introduction by her? That very brash, and yeah, she's destroying the place. Her poor mom looks like she could barely keep up with all the damage that this kid's doing. Definitely a very different disposition than Aang had as a youngster.
Most certainly. You know, I actually was thinking to myself, I wonder if these Paisho players also checked the Foggy Swamp to see if the Avatar would have come from there. Would have been interesting. But no, just she's loud, she's proud, and full of hot air.
Yeah, definitely.
But in a good way, she's proud of being loud. And again, may or may not be breaking a certain metaphorical wall as to those who may have not agreed to this sort of behavior or this sort of direction. I'm not exactly sure, but she blasts all them doubters, or whatever you want to call it, like in the face with fire. We transition to, I guess, a much more older version of her.
Yeah, and just focusing on that line of her being so brash in your face and being like, I'm the Avatar and you gotta deal with it. I was kind of wondering, like, was there pushback at the time when this was being announced? Were there folks out there, since you seem like maybe you were paying more attention to the fan community than I was, did you see any of that, or is that kind of, they maybe were just expecting that kind of reaction?
So my history with this, and I guess this, if you may, sorry for, you know, brief pause, should have done this in the beginning, but my history with this is, you know, so around, you know, 2010, 2011, I still was trying to see watch The Last Airbender, Avatar The Last Airbender, not the Shyamalan movie. I was trying to, you know, watch it any way I could, even though I could have gone to a certain bay full of certain delinquents and or whatnot on the high seas. But you know, I was on the wiki and whatnot, and there was one time again around like 2010 or 2011 where they started like putting out concept art, or at least maybe not concept art, but at least announcement that there is going to be a sequel series to Avatar Last Airbender, and it was called Legend of Korra. And so I was like, ooh, okay, that's pretty cool. I saw some of the designs and the artwork, and I was like, this looks really cool. I'm excited for this. But apparently the online community, or at least what I'm told, and even the commentary here where Bryke and the actor playing Korra, Janet Varney, they even like comment on the fact that, you know, some people, as I said, higher ups were not too pleased that they were going to have a female protagonist in an action-oriented show, kind of, you know, aim more towards boys. And, you know, it's kind of, I guess it's just cultural clash where it's like, you know, over in Japan with their programs, you know, many different peoples will watch, you know, whatever they have on there when it comes to animation, and whether it's got, you know, a female leader, it's got a male, well, obviously there's demographics, but, you know, I'll watch stuff that, like, you know, watch Sailor Moon and other shows like that, and girls will watch Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something like that. It doesn't really matter. So it's like, but yeah, over in America, the higher-ups, at least the executives, I guess, running the show were like, or at least, you know, funding the show, maybe, are you sure you guys don't want to, like, go for a guy? Like, you know, it worked so well last time, right? And Bryke were like, and initially, I believe they weren't, I think it wasn't like too long before they decided it was going to be a girl, but yeah, they initially started off with Korra being a girl. So yeah, they pressed on with this, and that is definitely a in your face joke, and people can probably make YouTube videos nowadays where they're being like, the beginning of this series is like, and or like this book is terrible because, you know, right away they give us like meta humor, or they like give us an in your face joke, and yet the same people will like go and praise Rick and Morty or something like that. So it's like,
oh,
all right, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and I think it plays well enough, and again, very quickly establishes that this is not just a fun loving kid. This is a kid who is out and proud and wants to show you how tough she is. And we'll definitely see that more as we, continue on. Yeah, do you feel like you're ready to jump over to adult Korra? Or at least late teens Korra? I don't know if they gave us an age, but She looks like she's like maybe like 18 or 19 at this point.
Yeah, something about there. So it's actually funny because if the timeline works out properly, you know, kids, if they were, if the kids who are watching at Last Airbender, I mean the show, if they're watching that, you know, around that time when they were kids. So actually, yeah, Aang was almost our age when we were, when that was aired. And then,
yeah.
You know, about this time, yeah, I was in college in 2012, so, and so were, well, you were of college age, so it's like, yeah, Korra probably is about our age, eh?
Yeah, no, that is interesting, aging with your audience. Yeah, that's smart. And again, she's, unlike Aang, she's had a long, long time to train as the Avatar, and in terms of her grasp of the elements, she seems like she's pretty powerful at this point in her life. And so she's doing this firebending training. You can see that she's pretty proficient. Even though she's naturally a waterbender, she's very proficient with fire and takes down these guys with ease. And I think this action scene is pretty cool too, right away establishing that this is, if you were missing some bending on the television screen, they give you some good variety of it here.
Honestly, I think it's also a good display of what the bending is going to be like throughout the show as well, even though we only get, you know, first a little bit when it comes to just fire. But I think it's also a good like demonstration of what Studio Miri is going to be able to do with animation and show, you know, the audience, hey, this is like, you know, the expert. We're kind of setting the stage here for what we're going to what you can expect throughout the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you were telling me that they did the art for all this season. So we're not going to have our usual. Oh, who did the animation this time?
And again, as I recall, I believe Studio Miri is made up of elements and our key staff members or whomever, I don't know how you would call it, of
JM
Animation. Thank you. Yeah, between the two, I don't know if, no, I think DR Movie was still their own thing. I don't know if Studio Moi was, or sorry, if Moi Animation, excuse me, had, you know, closed their doors at all, but no, I know some of the staff from South Korea had, I guess, you know, migrated over to Studio Mir, still in South Korea. I just mean like, you know, just moved studios, yeah. Transitioned. So I believe a lot of the key staff members are a part of the season as well, or this book, excuse me. So yeah, I definitely like the idea. And as you pointed out before, I do like the fact that the whole premise itself is that now Korra has been trained in these elements for years, so she's not expecting a war anytime soon, but they're, I guess, getting her ready for, I guess, to put her on display of the entire world. A different approach to being the Avatar indeed, because if you remember, the Avatar is only to know their lineage as of 16. Well, she's definitely past 16, so that's okay, well, I guess that's another thing where she already knew she was the Avatar, so she started off young. All right, well, we're going to see a similarly, probably like powered-wise, talented-wise to Azula, but in Korra instead. This is interesting. I wonder if she can bend lightning.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered if how things went with Aang, with you know, all those years of things falling apart for the rest of the world. Maybe this time around, after Aang's death, maybe they changed their plans for what they were going to do. Because it wasn't just they came straight to Korra's place. Apparently, they'd been visiting other places looking for an Avatar, too. So maybe they just scrapped that old program. It's like, okay, let's get them real early, and let's train them as best we can, just in case something bad goes down.
As we can see as well, like, you know, in the shot here, at about like 03, 06, we see that the Order of the Paisho players, they are also present for her development. So it almost seems like, yeah, they are the, I don't say taskmasters, but definitely like overseers of the Avatar, and they're almost devoted to the Avatar. Very, very interesting, I believe. I mean, I don't know very much about the Paisho players other than that they exist as an order unto themselves, but it seems as though they have come out towards the light. What can I say? I prefer my order of secrecy if they're, you know, doing it for benevolent reasons, but an interesting way to go about this now. But it seems as though we also see a person in the far left there as well, or far right there, at least from our perspective. Also, who may, I don't know, does that look familiar? Or, well, she obviously is a wise old person, but...
The older woman there?
Yeah, the older woman there in blue.
Yeah, something about her necklace reminds me, it makes me think of a certain Yeah, I don't know. Definitely familiar. Guess we'll find out. But I do like that, again, the order of the Pie Show players, as you say, they're a bunch of old fogies, and even though Cora's doing a pretty good job putting on this display of her abilities, they're all kind of just downers about it. Like, she lacks restraint. She's not quite there yet. And once she's done, she comes over all excited, like, hey, what are you guys doing being so down? You should be celebrating. I did great. And they're all kind of like, eh. Except for that old lady. She definitely looked pleased with the whole display.
Indeed. I don't know why. Like, she sees something in her as they ask this Qatar lady, like, hey, like, what do you make all of this? Given that, you know, she has mastered all three of the elements so far, but the fourth one and her spiritual side, air, and yeah, just the spiritual side of being an avatar is kind of lacking. What do you think, Katara? And she says, I believe it is time for the teacher, Tenzin, an airbender. Interesting. See where that's going to go, because Avatar Aang was the last of the airbenders, of course, so I wonder what that means here. But
yeah. Yeah, and a couple little bits there I wanted to highlight before we move forward. I did like, since we, you know, as a little kid, we see that she's already very naturally adept at using these elements for violence. And as the years progressed, she got very good at it. I like that they introduce a challenge right at the front for her, that she, you know, not only has she not mastered airbending, but she's also struggled to connect to the spiritual side of it. So even though she may have skipped over a lot of the training that Aang had to do over three seasons of trying to master those elements, we at least know that she's got something that she needs to work for. And what do you think about the fact that they brought back Katara here as part of her training group?
Well, it does show that Katara lived past Aang's age, so she is kind of the last of that generation, and so that's really sad. But again, I guess that's why. Yeah. It also makes sense why she would be so close with Korra, given that, you know, for bit six, Katara was the waterbending teacher to Aang. So I do wonder if she was also the waterbending instructor to Korra as well. That's definitely put that on your resume, even no matter how old you are, where you could, you know, I taught two avatars. That's pretty cool there. I don't think anybody would hire you for that. Again, her other, like, demonstrating all our other abilities, but you know, I think it's not a bad idea. It definitely does show that I think it's a good idea of how long it has been. And you know, we saw Katara, you know, in a preteen age, and now she's reached her grand's age. Makes me wonder if any of the other cast has of the previous series, excuse me, if they've also are still around. Oh, of course, older, but it would be interesting in that case. But you're right though with Korra, where it's like, yeah, you know what, you know, Aang. You know, a different world, different lifestyle and whatnot. He only had like one element to master each season, each book. Mm-hmm. Now this time Korra has all three up front, and it's the fourth. So it's definitely the opposite, where it's like, you know, she's very good at, as they said, the physical side, not to beat myself, but the spiritual side indeed is what she's lacking, the patience. So this is going to be a season or a book of patience. We shall see if that is the case.
Yeah, but she gets the answer that she wanted. They say that you're ready to move on to training with Master Tenzin and focusing on the airbending. Right away goes to see her best friend, Naga, this giant polar bear dog. And oh boy, yeah, even though we're probably not going to get much of Appa this time around, or at least air bisons, if this is our substitute, it's not quite as iconic, I would say, but it's definitely a pretty cute companion to have around. I'm happy to see this girl.
Naga, she big. Again, there's something about it. It's maybe it's a little bit Star Warsian, but there's just something about seeing a person riding a steed that's, you know, pretty captivating. So even nothing around, like, you know, Aang riding Appa as like a flying sky bison, that's something that's really rad. This one as well, there's just something that brings her back down to the ground in a way, eh? Whereas Aang's all up there on Appa being like, you know, high, soaring high in the sky. She's down here. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and it is such a big dog that it, you know, it needs a, it can't just be walking around this little fortress they got. So she walks up to the main gate and she's like, oh, I'm taking Naga out for a stroll. And you can tell the guard's a little bit put out, but he's been useless at this point. He's like, all right, fine, go ahead.
Yeah, they go on for a nice little jog, a nice little run, being free again. Yeah, the landscape, What are you thinking, my friend? You're a fan of snow on screen.
Oh, I was liking it. Definitely liking it. I think this is all... Yeah, I've got no complaints with the animation in this first episode. I think everything looks great. And it's nice to have a little moment of her just kind of relaxing there with her little companion, getting a sense of the two of them. But then up in the sky, who do we see coming? But, oh, we were just talking about Appa. Hey, it's Appa. He's back. He's a Grandpa Appa.
Wow.
Or wait, maybe not. And I'm happy to see him, even if it does make you scratch your head a little bit. It is still nice to see him. And nice to see that apparently the Airbender race has been replenished to some degree.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So this is the Master Tenzin. Katara and I guess the other Order of the Shy Paisho players are mentioning, he's the Master Airbender, and with him three little spawns, children, excuse me,
biting on his head
at his being and whatnot, and demanding their attention and whatnot. It appears though he asks Katara, mother, interesting, for help in, I guess, you know, getting the children away from him after being on the in the air for so long. Fair enough. No, that's fair enough. You know, as one of them kept, you know, asking the question of if they have arrived at all at their destination, and they finally have. So I can only imagine how many bottles of root beer on the wall was taken down. Probably thinking about, between like wherever they came from and here, give or take 5 million. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess we might as well go through the little family here off the bat.
Of course.
So we have Tenzin, played by the great J.K. Simmons. Always happy to hear his voice, and I was pleased when I first watched this to see that he was going to be in the show. That was exciting.
Also demanding pictures of Korra, like, to be at his front desk by Monday.
There you go. And we have his wife, Pema, and their unborn child there. I forgot to look up the actress who played Pema. Do you know? Or
no, I'm not too sure, but I do like her though as she's a non-bender, and she's unfortunately she laments that too, because Katara, you know, I guess does some, you know, a little bit of water bending to feel the child inside of her, and realizes that the offspring is to potentially be another airbender to Pema's lament. Just like, please, nothing against, you know, continuing this airbender race, but I like a normal non-bender, as if this were the Incredibles all over again. Too much to her son, you know, making a snowman and then blasting all the snow in her face.
Yeah, Milo, potentially carrying some of childlike Aang, maybe. Would have been more of this little funster.
Indeed.
But this kid has more of a chaotic element than I feel like Aang would have had, but I'm not sure.
You remember, yeah, Aang, he had all the humor and whatnot and had the energized bunny aspects to him, he was still at least, you know, for the most part, you know, trained and with the monk's tutelage, he was kind of, you know, a little bit more reserved, but he was much more controlled, let's put it that way. And obviously he had his moments, but this is here Milo, who has not been in that environment where they're constantly like told to do that, of course, and so this is the result of what Aang would have looked like had he not had that tutelage and discipline.
Yeah, and we have Iki, the youngest of the two girls. Yeah, what do you have to say about her? I don't remember her character too well from the characterization going forward, but
well, let's just put it this way: much like her brother, although not as out there and eclectic. She is, yes, once again, a ball of energy. Again, as I kind of, you know, make the similarity, if I may, if we're looking at if I have to use another, like, you know, childhood favorite film of mine, with The Incredibles, you know, we have the oldest, who is much like Violet, excuse me, in like how quizzical she is and more intelligent and more soft-spoken. We have, like, you know, the middle child, who's, you know, quick and fast, much like Dash. And then we have the unpredictable nature of Jack-Jack in Milo. So that's kind of like, you know, how I relate to all these. So she's, not that she's inquisical as well, but like, definitely, you know, she's the one asking, are we there yet? And then, of course, you know, asking grandma about, like, you know, or at least telling her grandma, hey, look at what I can do. So again, much similar to a brother. And then we, of course, have her older sister.
Yeah, and speaking of Quizzical, yeah, Jenora, one of the first things we see with her is her coming up to her grand-grand and asking, I've been reading about all your old adventures, and whatever did happen to that old Zuko and his mom? Yes, and apparently we just figured out what happened there, so, you know.
Well, where do I even begin? So it all started with the mistake that, I mean, you know, just a way of, you know, I guess tracking Zuko's mother with the idea of, and then Aki comes in and just, you know, completely, you know, stops the audience from ever knowing about that, even though it's, what, are you guys trying to, like, you know, put dust under the, I'm just kidding, no, it's, it came out a year before that comic came out, so it's whatever, they were teasing us with that coming in.
That is crazy, though. How frustrating for fans. Like, oh, now you're just mocking us with this.
It was the, one of the last things we saw in the show proper, so I guess they wanted to either address or cry. So, you know, just, like, tease us with that, like, jingling the keys in front of our faces. But yes, Jenora's a lot more, how do I put this? I don't know. Maybe she takes more traits after her mother. I'm not exactly sure. Just because I don't really know times where Aang was ever quizzical and whatnot. So she's the one that seems a little bit more soft-spoken, so really traits that her grandfather displayed.
Yeah, and the only other one of the cast that I knew of almost right away from listening to them. Yeah, Kiernan, Shipka. She's gone on to do quite a bit these days. She's out there, pops up in a lot of stuff. Happy to see her here too. I'd forgotten that she was a part of this show. I'll come back to it.
Who's she playing?
Jenora.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Thank you. Just didn't know who was, like, related to who.
Yeah, but so yeah, we see that the air nomads are definitely making a comeback with this family, and it's nice to have that connection to Aang as well. And it totally makes sense that his son would be the one to train the next Avatar in airbending. So,
thankfully, Tenzin, maybe for a time, I don't know. Apparently, like, he has siblings, is not the last airbender.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and we'll get to the siblings a little bit later on, but I'm definitely excited to talk about them down the line.
So finally, even though they have met before, it's Tenzin finally, or at least Korra finally gets to, I guess, reunite with Tenzin after maybe many years, because obviously he came down to visit his mother because he's a good son. And, you know, she's excited. She's like, oh, I'm so excited to see you again, Tenzin, and I'm ready to take the next step into the big wide world of the Avatar.
Yeah, but he's very disheartened to tell her that unfortunately he can't stay, and things back in the big city are not going so well. So unfortunately Korra's dreams dashed right there.
Well, this definitely puts a stick in the mud there. That's definitely given a fork in the road there with what the plan was. Well, hopefully he's not as stingy as his uncle was.
His uncle, who's that?
Oh, sorry, I meant Tenzin's uncle.
Oh, Sokka. For some reason, I was trying to think, did Aang have a brother that I'm just not remembering somehow?
Well, if you go to a lot of fanfiction sites, yes.
Oh, and we'll get to Sokka soon. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Oh, okay. Well, let's continue onward. So, yeah, the bad news is there. And we go into the next scene, learning a bit about what's happened, is that there seems to be some discourse in Republic City, where Tenzin currently is stationed, and in fact he is a leader there. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So it seems, yeah, there's some turmoil going on there, that and some inner workings are needing to be, I guess, addressed. So, I guess I see his point, is that, you know, if he wants to relocate here, first he has to attend to matters at his hometown. So it's like, okay, no, that's fair. I understand that. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the way they're quickly setting up that, yeah, one, his position in the city, and one, that there's definitely, if this part of the world that Korra is in is living in peace, there's still places out there that could use the Avatar. And as the guy's talking about, oh, it's way too dangerous for you to be there, she's like, well, I don't see what good it is keeping me locked up here. What good am I doing as the Avatar? So, and also maybe paints, yeah, the order of the Paisho players in a bad light, that they're keeping her, like, almost as a prisoner here for her training. Like it, she seems like she's old enough to go out on her own.
Yes, hopefully. But the thing is there is that, yeah, she actually decides, or at least comes up with the idea of, like, okay, well, I can't, you know, if Tenzin can't relocate down here for obvious reasons, what if, just throwing it out there, I go up to Republic City so he can teach me? And that's, yeah, where the, at least the, I guess, de facto leader, or at least the person we're seeing often, this Lord of the Paisho player, he's like, yeah, no, this is absolutely not. It shall not be. And that's where the whole, like, yeah, you should be, you'll be guarded. And just like, you know, the previous Avatar's earthbending teacher all over again. Great. Okay. History repeats itself.
Yeah, and so Korra, she storms out and goes off for another run with Naga and watches as the airbenders leave. And she's not happy. She's thinking about, now this, I feel like I progressed enough that I can't just be sitting here just kind of stifled. So she hatches a plan to escape and head off to Republic City. And we get a pretty cool little scene here with Katara. As she's preparing Naga for the journey, Katara comes in, and instead of acting like the Order of the White Lotus gang, of being like, hey, we told you you can't leave, she's just kind of there to see her off and give her some advice. And we see that she's still there supporting the Avatar, not trying to be a hinder, which I also enjoyed.
I mean, we have to remind you that Katara herself has experienced something like this at one point in her life as well. Many, 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 many moons ago, where she herself wanted to learn a element as well, something part of her. And, you know, the authority of the of her time also kind of was like, maybe you shouldn't do that. And then along comes somebody who has that power as well with her, and decides that she also wants to go out and see the world. So it would definitely be in her character, and, well, it would probably be root of her character to not kind of honor, or at least see the cyclical nature of this and be like, it is that time, isn't it? When I once was like my, once my grandmother saw me off, is now my time to see you off as well. It may pass.
Yeah, and speaking of time, this is sad. She mentions to her like, oh, you know, this is your time. My time's past, you know. My brother and Aang and many other my friends are gone. And that's the part where I was like, oh no, I was wondering if we're going to see Sokka. But, you know, they do say that in terms of life expectancy here in our world, in terms of men and women, men usually die a lot sooner. So I guess it's the same in their world. How sad.
Well, I mean, Aang went out first as well. And keep in mind, remember, the Avatar state can extend a life of somebody. So, because I believe Kyoshi lived for quite a long time. She lived for quite a while. Obviously Roku had a shortened life because of what happened, of course. So it seems as though Aang was already 112 when the series started. So he could have kept going, but who knows, maybe if he hadn't been in that ice all the whole time, he could have probably surpassed Korra now. Who even knows?
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, she sees her off and says, okay, you know, it's time for you to take responsibility of your generation and keep this world that your time is in peace and balance, like Aang strived to be. And she says she thinks she's going to be a great Avatar and sends her off off to the big city. It's like the small town kid. Oh, I'm going to go check out New York City. Let's see what it's like over there. So that's what we got here.
Maybe you shouldn't go to New York City anyways, but not to go back to the small town village, I mean. But before she leaves, she goes and bids her parents a farewell as well. It is nice to, again, see a difference in the dynamic between Korra and Aang, where Aang had Monk Gyatso, well, didn't, unfortunately. And instead we have at least Korra, who does have parents, or her parents grew up alongside of her, excuse me. So that is at least nice to see.
Yeah. Her Ma and Pa Kent. Yeah. I'm excited to see if Korra decides to go and be a reporter in the big city. I can't wait to see if that plot develops.
You know, like I said, he wants, you know, pictures of the Avatar, like, you know, by Monday, remember? So that's why she's going off. She's like, oh man, I got to get like there before Monday or else. By the way, at 09:54, we see a full moon.
Oh, yeah.
Just pointing that out there. That's all. I'm just saying, like, hey, we know what full moons mean. Should be like a
Princess Yue.
That too.
Kissing down at her would-be niece. Or I guess not niece, Ben.
Spiritual niece-in-law.
Spiritual niece-in-law. There you go. Exactly.
In-law. There we go. Spiritual in-law. Because if Aang is an in-law to Sokka, that's Korra. So anyway,
thank you for finagling. I was keep going.
But no, I'm thinking like there should be. I wonder if this is of the time as well. If there's like a little folklore tale or something like that of like not Second Star of the Rite, Straight Unto Morning, but full moon is like a sailor's delight or something like that. It's like, oh, full moon is something referring to like a bloodbender or something like that, eh?
Oh, no, let's save that for maybe a later development.
Now, hang on a second. What are you talking about?
Katara will come back and teach her the dark side.
That's the question of like, okay, so did she teach Korra bloodbending at all? Anyways, maybe best not to think about it for the time being.
Hey, maybe we'll find out. But one of the things we have to find out is we see that Korra boards a boat, a steam-powered vessel, heading off across the seas. And as she stows away in the storage compartment, we see that, yeah, definitely things have changed as we see, it looks like some sort of like animal with two eyes and some strange feet. Maybe they're like rubber feet or something there. What is that thing?
I'm at a loss for words. I'm not exactly sure what this thing is, this object is, but...
Yeah, is it a spirit? Never seen a spirit like that before.
No, it can't be. I wouldn't say it is, but there's something about... I don't know about you, but something about, like, it looks like it has glass on it, and it's all foggy, and then...
Yeah.
Wait a minute. As we pan away, there's, like, this hand that, like, suddenly appears and strikes. What the hey is that about?
Oh, no. And Korra, I see her right now. She's looking out a window. I think she sees an iceberg coming. Oh, no.
Wait, is this her first time on the seas? Did she technically get seasick at all?
No, she's too busy laying on Naga. And she put her nose away, too, by the way. At 10:03, she took her nose off for the scene there.
All right. Why don't you go try, animating a nose?
I won't try.
The previous frame before that, by the way, she had a nose. She clearly had a nose.
Yeah, that one just stands out to me a little bit.
Every freaking thing.
But I like this. I like her stowing away and sneaking off to the city. It shows she's willing to take some risks. And I guess Aang, too, snuck off in his when he felt like things were getting too tight for him.
Unfortunately, and or fortunately for her, instead of getting a, montage of her maybe stopping town to town and, just meeting other people. Now, this one just shoots straight for Republic City. And it's also, I gotta give her this, it's also pretty impressive that she kind of wish that she's like, oh, we're here. And then it's not Republic City. I was kind of hoping for that. I was like, darn it. And then get back in there. Because did she stow away or did she just barter to get onto the vessel itself?
Well, everyone looked shocked when she was running out, so I assume that she snuck on. And I don't know how much sway the Order the Paisho players have. I don't know if they, control the shipping lanes at this point. It seems like they've got quite a bit of power.
That would be a lot of fingers in many different pies.
Yeah, we'll see how much they develop them. But these early shots of the city as she's running and escaping through the streets. Oh, man, this is immediately capturing me, and I'm... so excited to get to play in this sandbox of this city.
Wow. So cool. Just white everywhere. Holy smokes. Mountains.
Yeah.
Wow.
Zeppelin type things flying around.
Hey, wow. So those dirigibles, those airships that were, just discovered and just created, at the end of the Avatar: The Last Airbender. Oh man, they are now commonplace. Fascinating.
Oh, yeah, and just reading the subtitles here as Korra's looking at the bridge, she says she's never seen so many Sato-mobiles. So, I guess maybe we'll find out who this Sato person is potentially in the future. I don't know, but...
So this mobile, it seems, got these wheels on it. We know what wheels are. I'm not sure exactly what the material's made out of, but they Closed doors. It's almost like a coach. It's like a cabin itself, an extension of a coach. But it's self-propelled without any horses or steeds to move it.
Yeah, I didn't see any steam pipes coming out the back, so I'm confused. Why? What? Where's the steam? Is there invisible horses, spirit horses pulling this thing?
All right, so maybe, you know, what sort of unholy magic are we dealing with here? Like, what's making these things self-propel here? Like, I'm, you know, Sokka was all about, like, oh, the magic that Katara has with her bending, and Katara was, you know, instantly like, it's not magic. These Saddlemobiles got magic in them. I'm telling you what, man.
Yeah. I didn't realize this was going to be much more fantasy-based. Yeah, maybe Saddle be like this wizard guy when I meet him. So
I hope he's not a wizard lizard.
Yeah, but as she's looking at them, she also stops and takes a look at the one of the great sites, one of the eighth wonder of the worlds in this place, which is the statue of Aang as he stands and looks over the city that he, I guess, played a big role in developing.
Interesting. The Statue of Freedom. Very nice. And she is definitely an awestruck wonder of it. She's like, wow.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, very conveniently next to it, or at least close to it, close by, we see an island. She says it's Air Temple Island. Ooh, okay, this must be where Tenzin resides. And so immediately she sets off to the island as they go for a swim. So fast, because for you see, the big snoofer of Naga is to go find some food.
Yep.
Which definitely makes me wonder how long they were in there for without any food. That's a problem.
It's like, I'll swim once I have some calories to swim off. Let's go track down this food that I'm smelling.
Jeepers, man.
And Naga, she's been used to running around on the plains of the Arctic, wherever they are.
Antarctic.
And the Antarctic. And she's not used to, well, if this is our world. But either way, she's not used to running around in a place where there's lots of things that she can disrupt or destroy. And so she's running right down the roads, and these Saddlemobiles, they're crashing right into each other.
Jeez. Wow, I think I've seen more traffic in an ant colony than here.
That's fair. Yeah, things are pretty still right now. There's a lot of stop signs around, a lot of stop lights, so.
Yeah, or whatever. Like, jeez. I mean, like, hustle and bustle of this place. Like, this is a concrete jungle, man. Even Ba Sing Se wasn't this, like, packed. Well, I guess it probably was packed, but, like, jeez, now they, like, have... There's a queuing system for like when to go, like, and when to stop. How polite of them. But anyway, the snoofer does the job, and it seems that Naga finds a street vendor. They still exist here. Sweet. And she's about to open wide, but, you know, Katara's like, hang on, we got to respect the wishes of, you know, this street vendor. So, well, before she, you know, takes a bite to eat, you know, and it's like, hang on, you gotta pay up. Honey, there. It's like, I got no funds. It's like, no funds, no food.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. And so at least Korra is honorable in that sense of, you know, not stealing from, you know, a working class person. So yeah, fair enough.
Hey, she's the Avatar. They should have just given it up. There you go. You're the Avatar. Here you go. Take everything. Take my house.
I'm not so sure she should be pulling that card. That's a little too selfish.
Hey, we'll see if she pulls that card. Let's keep it going as they're like, okay, if we don't have any money for food, let's go take a look at this local pond, see if there's any fish in there for us to eat. And so they go to this, I don't know, looks like a central park, something like that, or a provincial park.
A park that's centralized inside, I guess, the metropolis itself.
There you go. And Naga does some fishing for her, and yeah, they're just having a nice meal. And as they're sitting there, and she's using her firebending to heat them up, a certain guy who I guess was living in a bush or hiding in the bush, don't know which, sees her and is like, hey, you know, I'm smelling something good over here. Can I have a couple bites of that, one of those fish sticks you got? And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. And she asks him, like, oh, are you living in that bush? And he's like, yeah, that's where I'm living right now. But, you know, I'm kind of transient. I live wherever's working out for me. And he mentions that this park is apparently working out for a lot of folks who don't have homes. And Korra, as she listens to this, she starts to look kind of sad, like, oh wait, there's a lot of you that are just kind of living in this park. So yeah, definitely different than her home back in the fortress.
You know what would actually have been a cool tidbit is if Cora was bending the fish out of the pond with water. That would have been a nice little callback to the first episode of Avatar: Last Airbender there, where Katara was trying to, like, you know, catch fish with her water bending, much to her inexperience. So it was like, that would have been kind of cool if that was the case. But hey, that's water under that bridge that we see over there as a authoritative figure with a baton, I suppose, comes at them saying, "Yeah, can't be fishing. You get out of here." What a maniac. He's just like, yo, going everywhere, like, get a bell under there or something like that. Like, what are you, like, he seems like crazy lunatic. What are you doing there, you big, like, you big goof?
Yeah, I totally get why she runs and escapes when he's raising that baton to strike her right in the head. Like, he looks like a lunatic.
Something about you can't fish here. He's like, mumbles something in Italian there. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, he's like, if you fish here, that gives me a license to put you in the ground. It's like, oh no, crap, let's get away from it quick. This guy's a real loon.
Thankfully, the goon himself doesn't exactly have a lot of cardio. Definitely should be, going to the gym more for that or whatnot. Just doing some more like cardio exercises or something like that anyway. Hey, nothing wrong there, man, but just still. And so she runs off, and thankfully her little transient friend also gets away, retreats back into the bush where completely incognito, if you're playing Assassin's Creed, they'll never find her.
There you go.
So her and Naga, you know, take off and are still inside this park of centralized location when all of a sudden some music fills her ears. She's like, what the hey is that sound? She's like, oh, interesting, there's a performance going on or whatnot. And she, you know, follows the trail or whatnot. All of a sudden, it sounds like, for sure, she's like, oh, what's this all about? But for you and I, it's more something that sounds very similar to Uprising by Muse.
Oh, no. You are maybe one of those metal bands where they wear masks as they perform. As we see, some guys here with a megaphone, he's kind of yelling at the crowd, being a little bit of a, he's got kind of a snooty way of talking. And behind him is this figure of a masked man that looks... He's got kind of an ominous leer to him. At first, I was like, hey, is that a luchador? The more I looked, I was like, if that's luchador, that's definitely a heel. Something's wrong with that guy.
You never know. You can't be so sure anyway. The only points I'm going to deduct from this guy is that there's no soapbox that he's standing upon. So, yeah, he already, like, that's a minus point to that. But no, he speaks of not benders being the established order, the established class, and saying that him as a non-bender, and I guess to any who listen who are non-benders, there seems to be a disparate gap between them and benders, and it seems as though the benders are ruling them with an iron fist. And he's like, lyrics of Uprising, what can I say? Just like, they will not control us. They will not deprave of us. Anyways, Cora's like, now hang on a second. Well, in her own way, of course, she's like, hey, hang on, what are you talking here about? And he's like, oh, I bet you're a bender. And she's like, well, that I am. And Gotr's saying, hey, now, given me speaking here, it's like, oh, you definitely want to knock me off my platform here, right? She's like, I think I would. Probably not the appropriate response, but... first time, I guess, meeting someone of this stature, it's like, I guess Korra's not a Muse fan. Well, this is definitely going to develop into something bad. Eesh.
Yeah, he's definitely had some media training, and her as the Avatar maybe should have had that part of her curriculum. Maybe they should have taught her how to deal with that stuff, because this guy immediately uses it. He's like, see, this is exactly what's wrong with this city. All of us non-benders, we're being oppressed here. That's why you guys got to join the Equalist movement. Make sure to highlight that in red. So potentially these Equalists are going to be some to pay attention to.
I would hope that the font isn't in red with the highlighter, or else I wouldn't be able to see anything, or else this is just going to be like the Prince of Egypt all over again, where they just like put blood on the top of their doorways.
Oh no, let's not go there. Yeah, I'll go right back into my rants.
Yes, I'm not trying to go there. I'm just saying, let's just like okay, hopefully the Equalist movement's not in the font, the color font is not in red, or else I wouldn't be like, what does that thing say? I can't really see it from there.
Yeah, and look in the description for a link to our Prince of Egypt discussion. It'll be down there.
Random. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, you know, hopefully they did edumacate Cora on social studies in a way, just because it's like, if they didn't teach her, like, I'm not saying proper etiquette, but at least, you know, the rules of, you know, how humans interact with each other in this modern time, yeah, that probably would have maybe helped her at least, you know, talk with some people, because it didn't seem to. That went very well with that. So it's like, yeah. Okay, well, she and Naga sulk away and again are just very, very hungry. I don't know how much they got to eat of that fish. So they, you know, go down the street and, you know, I don't know if there's a way, I don't know if there are any sundials or places that she can tell the time from, because maybe it's about late afternoon. So she realizes, goodness gracious me, I've, like, look at the time or the like progression of time. I got to get to Air Temple Island. She's like, I forgot to bring a compass at the same time. So, asked one of the locals who was very, you know, nice. And, is like, yeah, no, she asks, hey, you know where Air Temple Island is? Oh, it's over there. And then like, you know, once again, blasting, geez, like, what the hey is that? It's just like all this obnoxious noise of a Satomobile. Interesting.
Yeah. And it seems that everyone clears the streets when this one comes down the road. They're like, oh crap, we got to get out of the way. And as we take a closer look at this one, and we look at the, I don't know what to call that at the front of it, the grill, is that a lion turtle on the grill, or what is that?
Grill definitely is a term. I'm also thinking of what ships have, where, you know, they would have, like, the mermaid, you know, in the bow. Yeah, I don't know. I forget what it's called. The mast? See, if I was still playing Assassin's Creed 4, which was 10 years ago, I probably would have been able to tell you, but in this case, no. So I've completely forgot about that, what it's called there, because you could collect a lot of those and customize your ship with that. But anyways, yeah, these guys are blasting Tool. Oh, great. So we got...
Oh, no. Here we go.
Oh, great. So these guys, these has-beens, these goons, they're playing Tool, and those guys before were playing Muse. Oh, great. No.
Yeah, it's the odds.
It's always this again. It's always this. It always has to be Tool fans against Muse fans. Why do we always entered our podcast? I'm sorry, Caleb. This is embarrassing. We're going to have to just deal with this for the rest of the season. All right. Sorry, folks, all listening to us. Please, Jumbo, those in between unaffiliated. Please, like, bear with us as we, like, deal with this. But anyway, so these goons come in, blasting their Tool, and they're, like, you know, up to the storefront owner or whatever, as shopkeeper, and is like, hey, you know, we saw that you hadn't paid for your Tool merch last week. And he's like, yeah, I have. Look at this gramophone here. It's got Tool etched on it. No, it's not. That was a fake. And then he has his other goon, like, you know, blast it to pieces and smithereens. And it's like, now you yourself, you got to get your, like, Tools memorabilia and merch in order or else. And then, of course, we hear, like, or else what?
Yeah. As Cora steps in, she's like, what are you doing bowling this guy? Maybe he doesn't like Tool. Maybe he just wants to have his shop be protected. And they're like, hey, that's what we're here for. We're trying to protect Tool fans from people who don't like their music. And she's like, what? This is getting confusing. And basically, it quickly turns into a fight. You know, Cora, she's been doing all these years is training how to fight. And so once she sees a couple guys who seem like they have some issues, she's like, okay, there's a couple nails that I need to hammer down. And so she gets right to it.
I am the hammer, and you all are rusty, non-existent nails. Anybody can listen to whatever they want, regardless of if it's Muse or if it's Tool.
There you go. Yeah. Even hip-hop. If you like hip-hop, hey, that's cool by me. These guys are like, no.
Yo, honestly, like, during this time right now, you can almost hear the Street Fighter 3 Alpha soundtrack going on right now. Let's go. But also here's some bit of what is that B, that wise old B once said? Something about jazz.
Wise old B. Maybe I missed this reference.
Yeah, well, anyways, no, it's just something about, like, the soundtrack having a little bit of jazz influence there, eh?
Oh, but I do like that these guys, since they're, like, wannabe gangsters, he, instead of, like, pulling a holstered weapon out of his jacket, he reaches into his jacket and pulls out some holstered water that he's got, and he blasts her. So even though Yu Dao, you know, previously, if this is Yu Dao, I should say, was like a firebender slash earthbender kind of hybrid city, we see that they take in all sorts at this point. It's a multicultural city. And yeah, this gang, This whole fight scene, I think, is also pretty cool. Gives us a nice variety of how the combats can work in this city environment.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Unfortunately, though it was quite a exhilarating action scene there, one problem, though, that we tended to have sometimes in the previous series, it was sometimes it did take place in a confined space or not too much of an urbanized environment. We are dealing with that now, and unfortunately, using elements inside a place where people stay and whatnot, again, a little bit different than before. Yeah, not too great.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that there was actually an uncredited third director that came on. I mean, this was 2012. Was that the year before Man of Steel came out? And Zack Snyder stepped in like, oh, I'd love to help you guys out.
Don't go there. Don't go there. Come on, man. Like, I think there were some pointers. And I know he was like the ghostwriter or at least ghost director of this as well. We're not talking puppet style, hand up the butt. We're talking like, just giving Joachim and Ryu some pointers. But just like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, maybe Korra smashed the guys. He would just ram the guy. I don't want to, because somebody else probably came up with that, but he was just like, no, you guys should get all the particle effects in there just to showcase all the destruction that's happened. It's like, Zack Snyder, you're a really cool guy, but what is it with your thing in destruction? Like, seriously, man, come on.
Yeah. It took Bright to come in after the fact and be like, okay, we need to write in a couple lines about her getting in trouble for this. Cause yeah, we can't have this kind of stuff going on. And then when they were watching Man of Steel the next year, they were like, oh no, if only we could have, wrote him some pointers for this one too.
I mean, it's funny you say that because literally as you mentioned these lines that he had, that they had suggested, in comes one of those dirigibles again, and down with cables and wires and tethers comes these armor clad people. I guess I'm not too sure who they are.
Yeah, they do call them officers, and they storm in, they arrest the group of hoodlums. But just as quick, they're like, okay, you too, lady, you're under arrest. You caused a lot of damage here. And Korra's shocked. She's like, what? I'm a hero. I just saved this street. Those shopkeepers, they were going to get their stores destroyed. And it's like, okay, maybe you saved that one shop from being smashed up. But what about all these other ones that you did smash up? Who's going to pay for that? And then she just kind of like, oh, she doesn't have anything to say for that.
Yeah, she's like, not gonna happen. So the police, so Batau there, he goes at her being like, well, without obviously the eye protection or the eyewear. He's like, you're gonna come down to the station. She's like, I got a deal. I still gotta get to Air Temple Island. I shouldn't have said that out loud. And then another chase ensues.
Yeah, and I mean these guys, I mean they're cops, so automatically, I'm looking at them with the side eye. I don't love them, but maybe it's not the best thing on your first day in the city to going around beating up cops. I mean, that's just going to get you into some trouble there. And I mean, she does it. She's knocking these guys around like they're rag dolls.
Cool thing though. Sort of, apparently they're metal benders. So looks like looks like Toph was generous with her display and or at least how would I put this, her offerings and or spreading the metal bending around to everybody. So does that mean everybody becomes who's a metal bender goes to the metal bending academy? Interesting. Or at least to this police station or anything. Anyway, but what I do like is at least when they're chasing after Korra, they start going infamous style along the power lines. That's pretty cool. Or these cable tops. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did wonder if that was specifically there for them or if they were power lines. Because at this point in the series, I don't think we've seen that they have power lines around in terms of, or I don't know if individual houses still need candles or if they're using electric light. I don't think they've made that clear yet.
That's a good question. Well, again, somehow these dirigibles are able to, be powered by themselves. These Satomobiles also are able to be self-propelled. And we see all these wired. We don't need to just see, these streetcars, these buses, whatever you want to call them, these trains, these small little mini trains that have these, cables attached to them that are moving. So somehow the wires and the cable cars are connected somehow to, push it or move it forward. And we also see while she's going along this, again, automated train, like this, I guess, bigger, you know, traditional, like, sense train, she evades them. We also see these like, lines as well. So it's like something about these lines means something.
Yeah, but unfortunately, her and Naga, even though they're making a valiant escape, beating up any cop that gets too close. Yeah, they you know, this city is, it's too well patrolled, and eventually they are caught, and they're brought to the city center, the police headquarters. And we do see, to mention your comment about the Beifong Metal Bending Academy, we do see they do have a big bronze statue of Toph right on the walls on there. So, I don't know, maybe that is a troubling conclusion to what happened with her school.
At 1809, so, you know, being raised to do a lot of, to see things her parents' way, to now, I guess, raising a whole new generation of how to enforce a new place of establishment. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, but maybe we'll find out as we go forward.
No comment. So, you know, we go inside this establishment, this building, and we see an interrogation room of sorts where Cora is cuffed to a table. Smart, I suppose. Keeping her, wanting her to keep her straight, but just like in their case, to keep her restrained. And we get this, you know, this officer there, you know, writing a list of, you know, arson, murder, jaywalking, you know, you even forgot to, like, you know, say, you know, bless you to somebody who sneezed and or to walk a grandma across the side of a road. So this is an outrage. And also allowing people to, you know, prevent people from listening to or anything like that, like, or be free reign. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is an establishment where we only play the good stuff. What are you talking about? This is all about, like, the classics, man.
Yeah, kleptomania in the public park, stealing all the fish. Like, I mean, come on here. What's going on?
Yeah, no, you definitely, yeah, you've gone one too far, young lady.
Yeah, and I was thinking, I wish they would show us a light bulb, because while the interrogation is taking place, there is a very central light source above them. I was like, is that electric or is that a candle? What's going on there?
Something is going on there a bit.
But something else is going on, too, as the police chief does mention her name is Chief Beifong. And Cora sees that as an inch. She's like, hey, wait a minute, Beifong, like, isn't that related to Toph Beifong? Oh, you're never going to guess. Oh, this is all a misunderstanding. Currently, I'm the Avatar, and, you know, your mom there, she had a relation with the Avatar, so can't you just grease these wheels and get me out of here real quick? Come on. You know that my kind doesn't deserve to sit in prison. So, oh no, she's pulling out that card. Already we can see that the arrogance of the Avatar has maintained itself.
My kind. Sheesh. What is that supposed to mean? Like, first off, like, Aang was in prison. It wasn't prison. What, remember Avatar Day? That happened.
Hey, but he saved the world. He saved the world. He didn't deserve to go to prison after the fact.
Well, I mean, it depends on which culture one of his other many selves happened to, I guess, anger or come across. Let's not, like, forget that. But yeah, it's, again, she tries her attempts at diplomacy to, hey, just let me out. And she's, like, not having it until, you know, one of the, I think, Bato opens up in this metal cage, like, really cool how they, like, at least imagine this whole place. Is like, hey, Tenzin's here, chief, let him in. I'm gonna give him a piece of my mind.
Yeah, and, you know, the more I look at this police station, I mean, it seems like everything around them is metal, and it makes me concerned that potentially they are only allowing metal benders to be police people, because I think they set up this thing in a way so that, yeah, there's no fire, because we do see that they have electric lights, there's no water around, there's no earth except for metal. So if you don't know how to metal bend, then yeah, you're completely disarmed. Yeah, I hope they'll go into it more and tell us if it is a training regimen that's allowed to everyone, if it's only reserved for this police force. And that's a little bit disturbing.
And honestly, if everything around them is metal, what, you know, that's a broad term, of course, would be pretty bad if it was metal that was ferromagnetic and can conduct electricity. Anyways, so Tenzin arrives, and it would seem that the two are, well, have history together, but unspoken at this point, but at least from the description, at least from the performances between the two, yes, it does seem like there's a bit of history, given that their parents knew each other.
Yeah, and Tenzin, ever the diplomat, tries to be kind to her, but right off the bat, she's like, nah, cut the crap. Like, this, I thought you were supposed to be leaving this part of town. I didn't want you around here anymore. She doesn't say that part, but you kind of get that sense. And she's like, what's the Avatar doing here? And he mentions that, oh, you know, there's been some issues. I've been delayed. And the Avatar, she's still supposed to be in the South Pole. I don't know what she's doing here. But he uses his ways to convince her to drop the charges against Korra, and that he'll make sure that she gets to where she's supposed to go right quick.
Then agrees, get her out of my city. And I like the little bit where, you know, she waves her hand and the cuffs release.
Oh, yeah.
And then, she, Tenzin orders her, like, all right, Korra, let's go. But before they leave, there's something that I guess Korra needs to address with Chief Beifong there.
Oh, yeah, I quite like this exchange as Chief Beifong, you know, typical of the elder authority figure being like, okay, I've got my eyes on you. She does this little gesture of pointing at her eyes, then pointing at Korra. And Korra, kind of smugly, even though she just got out of this situation, doesn't really have any sort of upper hand. She has to just kind of rub it in her face, like, I'm not going to take that. She gives her like a snide look and then does his thing back. And I do love that Lin kind of looks at it for a second, is like shocked. And then she just makes this look of like, what the heck? And then just kind of pouts. I thought that was quite cute.
Sheesh, the attitude.
Yeah, like, hey, come on, man. Like, you were just, I mean, you should get some punishment for what she did, Korra. Messing up that little part of the city. Like, how much of the tax are going to have to go to pay for that? And the insurance people are going to have to come and check out, oh, can we cover this window that you destroyed? So.
Don't let Sean on here or else.
And Tenzin's not happy either. Korra's kind of like, hey, I'm here. This is all just big misunderstanding. He's like, this isn't a misunderstanding. You blatantly disobeyed my wishes and the order of the Paisho players. And this isn't too good.
Korra there, she's saying, hey, and hang on, please understand. This was like, not all, but this was one of Katara's suggestions. And that definitely is she poked the bear there. She shouldn't have done that there. Because he definitely is like, do not bring my mother into this. And we see another little like character tick of Tenzin's where, like, I guess we saw this earlier as well, where if, you know, there's stress or anxiety, he seems to like, you know, have that, you know, just, you know, rub that and or like stroke that chin beard of his there. It's like, well, that's probably smart of him to do that.
Yeah, and thinking about it too, because as the more she talks, the more he's, because, you know, he's got his own issues. Like you said, the city's having some troubles. And at this point, Korra has passed her firebending and her earthbending, and I'm sure waterbending too, test. And it's like, okay, well, really, what good is the Avatar doing? Just keeping her on ice, literally.
Quite.
So it's a question. Would it be better for her in the city if he can train her and her maybe help out with some of the struggles that they're having?
And he is at a loss of words. He's like, until one of the officers, I guess, brings in Naga and shows her love for the officer. No hard feelings, but giving him an old little smooch and her kiss on his hair, and does it in a new fashion that the kids nowadays will, you know, like take over as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty cute moment. I definitely like that. And there hasn't been too many chances for humor in this episode. A couple of splashes here or there. So I appreciate another little touch of it, especially cute humor, which is one of my favorite ones for this series, or at least Avatar. She heads off with Tenzin, and they come back to the island, Air Temple, or I guess come to the island, I should say, for the first time. All the young airbenders come over to her like, oh, Korra, we're so happy to see you. Oh, are you finally come to live with us to do some training? But she's like, no, unfortunately, your dad, you know, he's a big wet blanket. He's sending me home. Even though I came all this way to see him, he's just like, get out of here. I don't want you. And so they kind of look at him like, oh, this is sad. And she does too. And as they're walking away, he starts thinking like, oh, man, like, this is all unfortunate. And maybe I should consider changing my mind.
Yeah, no, it was, I guess, during the journey, journey over to the island again, he had, I guess, had a change of heart and really thought about what Cora was saying about, you know, this was all Aang's decisions and, you know, this is all his legacy, but not to throw his dad under the bus, but he definitely says, you know, that was his time. And I guess in a way, these were the steps that he took just to prepare you for, you know, what your destiny is supposed to be. But, you know, you, I guess, are my father in a way.
Oh, no.
And so it would be neglectful of us to just keep you, you know, hidden, or at least, you know, keep you under wraps and lock and key and whatnot. It is probably time for you to get out and socialize, or else, you know, what would you be in just a person with all this power and not to, you know, do what your duty is to the world itself. And so he decides that it is indeed time for me to take you on as a trainer, and you will live here with us, and I will train you in the art of airbending. And so this rejoiceful moment, Korra like takes on of just, you know, being so happy, exactly what she wanted to hear, and embraces all four of them at once, showing her massive strength. And yeah, it seems as though, yeah, she'll Naka coming in also for, you know, a sweet little kiss. And yes, we then venture off to the next day, I suppose, with a large crowd of people with all these, jeez, what the, here are all these lights.
Yeah, just briefly before we go to that scene, I did want to comment that, yeah, that's one of my favorite images when she scoops up the kids and then picks up Tenzin and she's squeezing them. She's so happy. And Naka comes over and he's nestling in too for a little hug.
She.
But there is one bit of that image that does, because I'd paused it there for a while and was just kind of smiling at it, like, oh, what a great image. Then I looked and I was like, wait, what's going on down there? As you look at Korra and Naga's feet, Tenzin's staff is just kind of sitting there hovering over the ground.
Oh.
Did you see that? I was kind of like, hey, why is that hovering there? Is he using his airbending to hold it up? Like, it's like right at her, like her ankles.
Oh, I see. No, so I think that's Jinora's staff, and I know what you're talking about. It's not like, this is at, just for reference, it's at 2207 for us. So the bottom part of it, near closest to in between Korra and Naga's feet, that's a little bit more like what it is, but I could see the dilemma that you have where I guess it doesn't like fully fit in with the background.
Yeah.
Where, like, I guess they didn't accompany, because the shadows are there and they're fairly matched, but it just seems like the prop itself is, I'm not saying not integrated, but like just the thing was, you know, kind of, I'm not saying they withdrew it or anything like that. They withdrew, sorry. But I guess, yeah, that was a oversight, I suppose. Save it for the special edition.
It's a small point. It's still such a great image. That's an image that I would actually like to have on my wall. Just the four of them all together. Or I guess the five of them together with Naga. I think that's very cute. Or maybe it is four.
Six if you count Naga and Korra.
Six? Oh my goodness, what's going on there?
Wait, Tenzin, Jinora, Iki, Milo, Korra, Naga. Yeah, six.
Oh, I forgot that Milo was there. You can't see him from the image that I'm looking at, but... But either way, sorry for that little delay.
That's fine. I don't mind. That's a good point out to just show me. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And so everyone's there. I guess they, again, didn't give her any media training, but yet put her right in front of a whole crowd of reporters. Hopefully no one's in there looking to scandalize her with some sort of scoop.
Mm.
Like, we heard that you destroyed a city block yesterday. It's like, what? So she introduced herself. Hi, I'm the new avatar, Korra. Maybe you heard of me, maybe not. We've all heard of you. And she's like, oh, I just moved to Republic City. And yeah, immediately everyone's all over her. Like, yesterday when you were fighting those guys, were you trying to send a message to the triads? And, oh, are you going to be here fighting those anti-bending revolutionists? So setting up some plots right away. Maybe some of the conflicts that are going on in this city.
Korra, Lois Lane of the Daily Planet, what's your take on Tool and or Muse? Where do you set it with it? next question, please. Cora, April O'Neill of Channel 5 News, I believe. What's your, how did you end up here? Is it true? How did you end up in Republic City? Is it true that you stowed away on a vessel? Isn't that illegal? Did you not have like the certain papers? No comment. Next question, please.
It's again, maybe they should have been more comprehensive with their training of her as the leader of the police. Or as the leader of the free world, in a way.
Oh, yes. Oh, boy.
Police. It was because the Beifong, are you going to be working with Miss Beifong, was on the screen. That's why I said that.
I guess that's technically true. Oh, Cora, Vicky Vale of the Gotham News, or whatever she's with, I forget. Is it true that, what is your relation with Tenzin? Is there anything going on between you and him regarding the fact that you are technically the reincarnated version of his father? Again, no comment, please.
Yeah, are you technically the grandfather of his children? It's like, this is getting weird and confusing. Let's just end this now. And are you secretly the wife of Katara, considering your past self? It's like, what?
Okay, Iris West, I'm shutting you down on that one.
But she says, all these questions, maybe ask me in a couple of years. You know, I'm still in training. But believe me, as the Avatar, I'm definitely still going to fulfill my role of being the center of peace and balance in the world. And so if we can shut down this conference, I'll get right to doing it. I
would definitely hope so. So... not really agreeing with the media coverage of that, but, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Not so with the announcements, but then we cut away before we end the episode off with, we transition away from, this, they had this, like, electronic megaphone of some sort, able to, put her voice out in waves, just like that follower of Muse had with the megaphone, except it looks like this was like a high-tech version of it. I'm not exactly sure, but it goes into this box that's projecting her voice. Very interesting. And oh my, turn that ruckus to, it's I don't know if this is like the headquarters of like the movement of Muse, but like they're blasting Uprising nonstop. Turn that. Okay, listen. I love Uprising. I get that.
Hey, turn it up. Turn it up. Yeah.
Yeah. But not too loud. Jeez. Will you turn that down, please? Like, jeez, they literally have it on like loop. Goodness gracious. How do they communicate or whatnot with each other? Goodness gracious me.
Yeah, I'm currently holding my Uprising CD, and actually, this is Resistance. My bad.
Yeah, it's Resistance. Sorry, not like Uprising. I mean, maybe they're playing other tunes as well. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe they're playing the whole dang album, but they just, at least in this instance, they're this hooded man or whatnot. He's like just listening to it nonstop for some reason. I guess I'm not exactly sure why, but yeah, I guess this guy in goggles asks, "Hey, so like, yeah, this may put a dent in our plans there against the tenants of the tools, like, what should we do about her, their boss?" And it's just like, well, we do as the song foretells, even if we have to accelerate our plans. Fine.
Yeah, so you gotta wonder what's going on there. I mean, I guess the protester guy that we saw was saying for people to join the Equalists, so I guess that's who these guys are. So I have to find out what they're trying to equalize. I guess we know they hate benders, so. Yeah, I guess we didn't talk about too much with that little scene of her having that interview with the protester guy, of that guy claiming that benders were oppressing the non-benders. So yeah, I guess we'll see. Maybe there'll be some sort of civil rights discussion as we go forward, which could be interesting
indeed,
because so, I'm sure it would be very lame to be in a society with all these superpowered people and then you're just a regular person just trying to make your way through that world.
It definitely would probably bring up some thoughts, and that probably would cross the mind. But we only get seeds for now. We get set up for now. So hopefully they will follow up with that for now. But that is the end of episode one. Welcome to Republic City. Caleb, your thoughts over this matter?
Yeah, they had a lot to cover in this introductory episode, potentially even more than they had in the original pilot. Or the original first episode, The Boy in the Iceberg of Avatar. Because, a lot, it's not as simple as just something that you can sum up in a summary like Katara did during that first episode of what was going on. We've got the triads, these bending gangs terrorizing shopkeepers. We have these equalists, but politically driven, maybe terrorists, I don't know. Or at least some sort of political party that have some struggles going on. And yeah, I think that they do, even though they've got a lot to introduce in terms of plot, I think they still give us enough to make me like Korra almost immediately and to just enjoy the setting. Like just the fact that we're going to have a series set in this cool looking Republic city and all the stuff with the cops too. I mean, we had some questions about what's going to happen there. So I think that they introduced a lot of cool questions while still making me care and be excited to see Korra's character explored. So I think they did a solid job for this first episode. Maybe not. I'm probably not going to walk away thinking of this as one of the best of this first season, but for laying the groundwork, I think they did a good job.
Well, with me, I have to say that, again, you're kind of right, where this is very much the opposite of, like, you know, the Last Airbender, where that one, you know, kind of set up, you know, it was a little bit more slow paced and a little more methodical to, even though obviously it showed, you know, us the players of the piece and what would happen, or at least, you know, them going forward. This one really sets up the fact, like, you know, instead of an open world that they're going to all explore this time, Korra, even though she has been enclosed in the world, you know, down the South Pole and stuck there for years, this time she's, you know, going to a city, and it looks like it'll be only stuck in, you know, this whole place. So it'll be interesting how much use they can get out of an entire, like, you know, urban environment there. So that's definitely different from the series itself. But, you know, yeah, with Korra herself, you know what, there's things about her that are definitely different from Aang, but there is still some flaws. I mean, not flaws, but, like, you know, different spaces that she can improve herself on. So that's definitely helpful for a viewer to be like, all right, well, there's things that she needs to learn about, given that if she is a little bit bashful and she has to learn, like, the patience of airbending. That's definitely something that we're going to be seeing, and we'll see if this will be also, like, serialized or if this will be episodic like the previous, you know, series was, where, yeah, it was obviously serialized, but there were some episodes where it was, you know, like we said, there was filler and whatnot. So actually, to bring back that old thing, do you think this was a filler episode or, like, you know, story episode?
Oh, definitely story. Yeah.
You would not believe. Yeah. I don't think it would be any otherwise by that. But I think also a thing that we forgot to mention was the music, man. The music. Oh my goodness. Jeremy Zahn, you.
Oh my goodness.
Like, man, you have son of a gun. You did a fantastic job with the music there.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's as much as I love so much the music throughout Avatar, Last Airbender. Immediately, I love the change here. You can feel that it's the same composer. You can feel the DNA. But yeah, very cool. And the last kind of theme that plays over the end credits, that's one of my favorite pieces of from this whole series. I think that piece of music is so... By the time I got to the last season and I was approaching the end of the series, I would just savor that end piece music so much. I'd be like, oh, I don't want the series to end just because I love that piece of music so much. So unlike most series where I kind of skip to the end once the episode's over, I always sit to the very last moment to savor that piece of music there.
Take it in. Take in the atmosphere and whatnot. Actually, what did you think of, like, the, I guess, the as the camera, like, closes in on, like, Republic City, what did you think of that for, like, the end credits?
That's really cool, too. Definitely like that.
Yeah, I could say a progression of what the previous, like, end credits were for Last Airbender.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe it's just the music itself, but something about just the imagery too. It's got, like, this haunting quality to it for me. I don't know.
Oh, but interesting. Like either like an unfulfilled nature or just an uncertainty of, like, oh, we still have so many, like, you know, stories to explore inside the city.
Yeah, it's some sort of somber quality. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it fully.
Well, remember, as each of the elements reflects a season, this is the season of autumn, which we haven't exactly, you know, seen in the world of Avatar. So it'll be fun to explore on. And actually, when I first got this Blu-ray, not the, you know, the one that I have of the two box set, but, like, the original Blu-rays that I got from my parents for my birthday, in 2013. It was autumn when I got it. So it was actually like going alongside the season itself. So kind of, yeah, it felt pretty cool, like watching it alongside the season that it takes place. And so I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, but I'm definitely looking forward to exploring more of this series. I can't wait to get to the next episode. So take us out, and yeah, in 2 weeks from now, I guess we'll pick up with the next one.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and affiliated, for listening to us talk about this episode. I'll leave you all with this. Go give the new Muse album from, I think it was last year, yeah, 2013. Wow, that one too. 2023. A listen. Till next time. Peace.
I didn't know they were still putting out music. I thought that they broke up.
Uh-huh. That's Caleb. That's,
I really did.
That's Caleb's whole thing, man. You gotta know that. If it was, you know, if a band hasn't like been heard for past 2 years, they disbanded. Like, for Pitt's sakes, he thinks that, you know, Metallica has been disbanded ever since Saint Anger.
Oh, I know that they haven't. They'll never give up, those guys. They'll never give up. They'll be in their graves pumping out music from the afterlife, I'm sure.
Sheesh.
Enough time for one more story.
What's that word you use?
Spoilers.
This isn't for your eyes.
This section of the podcast contains spoilers for all seasons of Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra. Enter at your peril.
She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes. Haven't you?
Listen to me, everyone! We're here already! Journey!
Okay, so I don't know if I wouldn't call this, well, it's a spoiler, but Caleb, the creators did come out and say that, you know, after the war, they're apparently Aang, you know, he was going around the four temples again. I don't know which one it was, one of the four air temples. And he came about a cave that had a lot and a lot of flying lemurs and sky bison.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Is that in the show, or did they just come out and say
it? I believe they came out and said it.
Okay, yeah, maybe I'll keep it in the spoiler section just in case it does come up at some point. But
take it as you. I don't believe it's ever mentioned in the show, but unfortunately, I think that was one of the extra canonical things. But you may do as you wish. It's one of the extra canonical things where they're just like, oh, I guess they're just, you know, we still want to have sky bison and not have, you know,
yeah,
endangered species or species go extinct. So it's like, no, let's bring these marketability products back. I mean these animals back. Excuse me.
Oh, how cynical.
Jeez. Excuse me. Yes, and more on the fortress, if you don't mind me giving a little spoiler. Sure. Here, but it you know, the reason she was kind of like kept inside this fortress, and we even see some guards as well, like 0435, they also kind of, you know, they're even keeping watch at a distance. The reason for this whole, like, you know, I don't want to say being held captive, but at least, you know, personal training facility is because of the Red Lotus and how they, as a child, the leader Zahir, he and his band tried to kidnap her for reasons of, I guess, well, maybe to groom her or whatnot. I have no idea further of that other than what they say in book 3, but quite definitely reasons they didn't tell her about, but anyway, regardless of that.